Gonna rock the shade. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
The meaning makes the reason.
Brian Schumann from his brand new release, and we got Brian on the line. Hey, Brian, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Richie?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, this is the first time you've been on our show, and we always start by giving the fans the opportunity to get to know who you are, not only as an artist, but also as a person. And the best way to do that is to look at your journey, how you got to where you are today. So give us the story of Brian Schumann.
All right. Well, music is a central through line of my entire life. I've been singing since I was a kid. My parents got me into piano lessons, I want to say like first or second grade. And then just kind of kept going from there. Picked up the trumpet in sixth grade, eighth grade. For Christmas, they got me an electric guitar, and that was awesome. From there, just kind of ended up in every garage band in town and played all sorts of different things. You know, got myself an acoustic guitar, started writing my own songs, but also did all sorts of metal and emo and screamo and all that stuff in the late 90s and early 00s. I ended up studying music in college, and really introduced me to like the classical realm and these large orchestras and just everything you can do with that sound, you know, that I had largely heard in movies up until that point. And it really blew my mind. And basically since then, you know, I've just been finding ways to combine all of these different elements from, you know, my roots and like pop and rock music, you know, indie, alternative, all these different genres, to like free improvisation, because I played in a lot of jazz groups in college as well. And then, you know, even wrote some music where I'm combining the electric guitar into the orchestra, and just, and now with this group, the Sunshapes, in this project, a lot of what I do is almost bring like some of those classical elements into the rock band or pop band setting. And for this upcoming show, at the end of October, October 26th at the Minnesota Music Cafe, I ended up hiring a string quartet to come in and play with my group as well. So it's going to be the full, you know, I'll be playing acoustic guitar, some piano, and singing. My wife is there too. She also plays trumpet. We met in college. So she'll be singing and playing some trumpet as well, and keys as well. And then we have the rhythm section and the strings. It's going to be a really cool show. I'm very excited for it.
Okay. Now, what were some of your early influences as a musician learning, you know, as you were discovering and learning the instruments?
You know, I think, let's see, my first concert ever was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Mm. I remember we had some nosebleed seats. I think my dad won them on KQRS or something like that. And I remember looking down there and just seeing like a semi-truck worth of guitars and just being like, oh, that's so cool. So it's just like all the music that I heard on the radio, like I said, in movies. I played a lot of video games growing up, so there's kind of like those elements that creep in as well. There's one band, Incubus. When I heard them for the first time, it honestly blew my mind. I was like, wow, this is really cool what they're doing. And I think there are a lot of those elements, you know, the way Brandon Boyd, the singer, can turn a phrase, and the way that Mike Einziger plays guitar, that, you know, I just learned everything in their catalog. So it really does influence, you know, how I play and the way I approach these instruments and the way I approach songwriting, although I don't really think I found anything like them. But it is, like, heavily influenced. And then just everything in that era of music that kind of came out in that alternative and new metal genre at that time when I was in high school. So it really, like, hit home.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about this new release. You know, every release has a story. There's a reason for its existence. What is the reason for this?
This is a batch of songs that really, for the most part, just poured out of me over the last 5-6 years. A lot of them came out, you know, I had kind of written them or had song seeds pre-pandemic, and then within the pandemic time, just kind of stuck at home, I really was able to flesh them out and just, like, you know, there's a lot of introspection. There's a lot of, there's some songs about escapism, about love, about, you know, centering yourself and finding calm and peace. And I think that's just a lot of what I had been going through. And it just, you know, felt like time for me to make these real and get them out in the world.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. What song on this particular release did you find to be the most personal? That kind of really, when it was done, when it was recorded, it just kind of struck you as being this. Yeah, this is the one that really, you know, epitomizes what I'm trying to get across.
I'd have to say it's Questions.
Okay.
And for so many reasons, it came together so effortlessly, and I mean, personally, I just love, it's kind of like this ethereal kind of ballad vibe. A friend of mine who plays electric cello, I created a patch on this guitar synthesizer that just adds all this reverb and these really cool, like, synthesizer tones. So it almost sounds like a theremin throughout, but it's actually a cello. Mm. And it just created this, like, really, like, deep emotion. And, yeah, that one, to me, it's very personal, and it's... Yeah.
Okay.
That's my best answer. I really love the way it turned out. So
now, what do you want your listeners, your fans, to kind of walk away from on this? What do you want them to feel?
Yeah, I mean, I hope, you know, beyond a sense of enjoyment, I guess maybe feeling like, you know, they know me better and they might know themselves a little better. You know, maybe that's a tall order to ask, but, you know, I think there's also just a lot of positivity that can be found in a lot of the songs as well. So maybe uplifted and, moved in a certain way. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about you as a songwriter, your process. When you sit down in front of that blank piece of paper, what is that mechanism, that thing that you may do that taps you into the muse and gets those juices flowing?
Yeah, I think for the longest time, I've kind of just like started humming random melodies, or, you know, like to fill that awkward silence if I don't have anything to say, or if I'm by myself, I just kind of will start beatboxing, or like sometimes there's just like a turn of phrase that pops into my head or something I see somewhere along the way, and I go, oh, that's cool, and I'll just kind of like hold on to it. Maybe I'll write it down in a notes app, or I'll go, oh, there's something there, or it just gets set aside. Sometimes it's also just sitting at the piano or sitting with a guitar and just kind of strumming, you know, noodling around, and you go, oh, that's cool. I like that, you know? So I'll just like make a voice memo or record it, and I kind of will strum and kind of start mumbling a little bit. It's kind of like strumbling or something. And, you know, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I think I'm singing words now. And then it's like, oh, you know, that turn of phrase that I thought of a month ago, I think I have something that fits here now. And then it just starts to blossom. And sometimes on the other side of it, you go, wow, there's a song there. How did that happen? You know? And it still amazes me sometimes. And I do know music theory, but I realize that I don't use it a lot in the writing process. at least not with the core of what the song is. So I might write a whole song, and I have a really good chord progression and melody line and words, and then I'll go back and analyze it and be like, what am I even doing here? So that way I can add other elements into it.
Right. Now, let's talk a little bit about when is a song done? Because I think a lot of young songwriters, they get hung up on the rewriting. You know, you can write the hell out of a song. And just, you can destroy it after a certain amount of time. You got to be able to...
You sure can.
You got to be able to put the pen down and then give it to the band, the producer, the, you know, and let them put their fingerprints. I often look at it as like raising a teenager. You know, you got to throw them the car keys sooner or later and let them experience life and evolve. What is your quantifier that you like to use to determine that moment in a song's life?
I think there's definitely a point. I mean, complete cop-out answer is you know when you know. But but also, I think there is a point when the song starts getting less good by adding more to it. And you can feel when that happens, when it starts to be overworked. And I think this is something that, you know, I definitely did, like you mentioned, as a younger writer, composer, whether it's instrumental music or songs, where it's just overworked, and there's too many layers, and there's too much going on, and things start to, like, interfere with each other. And I think that's maybe what I love about a lot of this album. There are a lot of elements, but I think they all work together in a great way. And that was something I really did like about the way Questions turned out, is it kind of goes up and elements come in and then they drop off, and it gives enough breathing room for the things that I want the listener to hear and focus on. And then I think, like, especially, you know, it's pretty amazing now with all the digital technology we have. It doesn't take any effort to mute something out and go, do I like it better without that in there? You know, it's easy enough to just throw everything at it and then be like, let's start pulling things away and see if it breathes better.
Okay.
Well, and then you sleep on it and you check again tomorrow.
Well, let's talk about the process of going into the studio, because that is a whole other kind of creative flow. You know, having a good song, that's kind of half that battle. But creating this song's sonic signature, creating its identity, its vibe, not only identifies you as an artist, but does the song justice, is an art form in itself. When you get into that environment of the studio, what is the process that you like to use to kind of capture the sound you're looking for?
So it's interesting, when I was younger, the model that we followed was, me and my buddies would get together in our rehearsal space, and we would just jam until we were like, that's the thing. And then you'd have a dozen of those, and then you'd be like, let's go to the studio and record the thing. And it was kind of just like, it's so expensive, let's make it as fast as possible, so you're just so prepared. And now, I do everything out of my home studio. Mm-hmm. So I have essentially infinite recording time. And it's a lot more like maybe painting or building as I go. So I'll have an idea and I'll lay it down. And then I'll go, that's cool. And I'll start playing around with different elements and adding it in and going, this is cool now. Oh, let's add some bass. Let's add some drums. You know, all these different things. And then I go, oh, now with that stuff in there, it would actually be better if it was 3 BPM faster. You know, like those little minute differences. And you go, okay, well, it's no big deal for me to just like change the click and retrack everything.
Right.
So I think there's like a lot that can be done there. And then what I end up doing is, you know, certain elements that, you know, I know my way around a drum set, but I don't know that I'm like a drummer, so I will like write these parts, but then, you know, and or like the strings, all of these things, I'll write them, I'll create the sheet music. I'll hand it off to people who are, like, that's what they do. And then they can take it and run with it, and they add their flair, they add their signature to it, and you go, yeah, now it's really grooving, now it's really working. And when all the things come together and you go, hey, there it is, you know, I think that's really when you know. You know when you know.
Okay. Now, you know, I'm always curious, you know, being a recording engineer, I mean, I started on tape. You know, my first job in a studio was on a splice block. I hated it. It was not a fun process to edit, you know, with a razor blade.
Right.
No, because if you screwed up, that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's done. Yeah,
it's done.
No control V.
Yeah, it was over. So, you know, the sweat would drip, you know. Now, what kind of DAW did you find to be the one that really worked with your workflow?
I use Pro Tools, and honestly, it's the one I started on. And, you know, people always ask me, or they'll try and get into discussions, which one's best. And I honestly just say the best DAW is the one that you know how to use.
Right.
Because, you know...
Well, you know, I always found that people who use Pro Tools basically use it because they don't want to learn something else.
Yeah, I mean, the cost of time to learn something else, mm-hmm. I mean, I like it, too. It does me fine. I know people complain about it crashing all the time. I don't know, mine works great. I don't know, like... you know, whatever. I imagine any software at any point in time, if you push it to its limits, you might find the bug or whatever. You know, save and save often. But yeah, it works great for my purposes, and I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I've been in the industry a long time. I mean, I've used everything from the old Dr. T's, you know, KCS software to Pro Tools to Cubase to Sonar to Cakewalk to Logic and Fruity Loops, and you know, I remember
Fruity Loops. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up on Studio One because I really enjoyed its workflow and the way that they constantly listen to the user base for new features. You know, and you know, they're incorporating some pretty wild stuff, which I find to be really interesting. So that kind of thing, you know, that's my journey. Now, let's talk a little bit about who's playing on the CD with you. Give me the lineup.
Yeah, so I'm on there, obviously. I did vocals on every song, guitars, keys, some organ, played most of the bass, played a little trumpet on there. My wife, Kate DeVoe, is also on there, so she's singing. She also plays trumpet on a number of tracks. And then a whole lot of studio musicians. So through this company called Musiversal, they got me connected with studio musicians just around the world. And it's a really amazing setup, the way they do it. You book a session, you send over your sheet music or, you know, your temp track or, you know, a clip track. Here's everything I have. You meet up with them on Zoom or whatever their Zoom-like platform. You get 35 minutes. They do a number of takes, and then they just send you everything back. So it's like in real time, you can talk about, oh, can you play it more like this? Or, oh, that was really cool the way you did that. Or, you know, make it your own, you know. And so it's each song has a different lineup, a different cast and crew. There are some local people on here as well. On my last album, I had a few more local people. This one, I mentioned Vella Barkerson, she played electric cello on a number of tracks. And then I have, let's see, Emmanuel Pavone. He's from Croatia, and he played cello on a bunch of them. Sergio da Silva. He played drums on a number of them. There's a singer from Bulgaria, Dorothy Takev. She did some backing vocals that just sounded really great on a lot of the songs as well. Let's see, another drummer I worked with from Argentina, Fernando Moreno, Horacio Paris from Costa Rica, another drummer, Felipe Ribeiro from Spain. So he did a bunch of key work on a number of songs. I don't want to miss anybody. I'm going through my notes here. Nisa Adina from Malaysia, a fantastic violin player. And I believe that's the entire cast on this one. Oh, nope, I lied. Andre Bascaneo from Brazil. He played bass on the song Ruby. And it's the way he played, it's, you know, it's very different than the way I play. And he just really brought like this really amazing like funk element to that tune. It's really upbeat. It's really fun. So I'm so glad that I handed that one off to him. Nice. And then lastly, Igao Drummond, also from Brazil, he did some auxiliary percussion on that tune, which is, you know, great addition to that song.
Okay. Now, once you get it recorded, you have to get it out to press and radio and create the buzz. And you're working with Krista Valenkis of Elephant and Flowers Media. Tell me a little bit about that relationship and how is it going?
So far, so good. Actually, right before we got on the call, she just sent me another review that came through. Really nice write-up. You know, she got us in contact, and it's been really fantastic. She's so upbeat and just has, you can tell, like, this drive and this passion for, like, helping artists be seen. And so it's been really great working with her.
Okay. Now, I get into a lot of discussions with musicians on some of the topics that are kind of the hot button items that are in the music industry. And usually the number one item right now is this whole world of artificial intelligence. And, you know, usually when that subject comes up in a room full of musicians, you get a wide variety of reactions. Usually there's look of horror, there's the side eye, of course you get splashed with holy water, because you know you are invoking the devil itself, and then you know this whole like nah me never I will never touch it ever kind of an attitude. And I think a lot of musicians are missing the point. They kind of miss the number one, the fact that it's here and there isn't a thing right they're going to do about it. That, you know, their new phones are coming AI enabled, their computers are AI enabled, your Alexa is AI enabled, you know, everything is going to be AI. And you know, even Google is AI now, because the first thing that comes up on your search results is the AI version of what you're looking for. So, you know, we're not going to get away from it. And in the music industry, I see it segmented into three distinct categories. The first category is the most scariest for independent artists. It's the creativity side. Now, I look at AI more as a creativity catalyst than a creativity replacement. And the reason I have that perspective is that I am old enough to remember back in the 60s that if you were a songwriter, the rhyming dictionary in the thesaurus was considered cheating. It was. If it didn't come out of your brain, it didn't belong on the paper. You know what I mean? You had to look it up in a book, you were doing something wrong. You were deficient in some way. And then along came the drum machine. And let me tell you something. The industry went nuts that, you know, you're going to suck the life out of music. It's going to become metronomic. It was, you know, taking jobs from drummers that nobody's going to want to learn how to play the drums anymore. We're going to have a shortage of drummers. Well, that ain't happening. And then forget about it. When MIDI first came out, everybody was running around with their hair on fire. That you can go into the studio with a sequencer and a synthesizer and basically create music without musicians. So it was just insane. And you know what? During the disco era, it was abused, and the consumer eventually saw through that. And those technologies became tools. So to me, I look at AI as initially it will be abused, but it will eventually become tools in the writing process. Just like a rhyming dictionary, you can go to ChatGPT and say, what rhymes with this word? How many ways can I say this phrase? How many, you know, you use it as a collaborator, not as a replacement. It's an amplifier for creativity, not the replacement. So that's where I see it on the creative end. The second tier is efficiency. Let's face it, recorded music has lost the status of product. And like you said, going into the studio is an expensive proposition, which is why you started your own. But even your own studio, you want to be efficient. You want to be able to get in and get the sound you're looking for as quickly as possible. And using AI tools can help you with that. You know, if you're mastering AI, Ozone 12 is insane and a great way to give you starting points on getting that really nice mastered sound. You know, reference EQs, where you can take a reference track and it will give you suggestions on where to put your EQ to reach that reference mastered EQ that, you know, that you like so much. Luna is adding AI tools to it where you can give it commands through any microphone in your system and say, hey, Luna, start record. Hey, Luna, stop record. Hey, Luna, pull out 2 dB at 50K on track whatever, you know? So all of that is now coming in. You have Studio One with their stem separation where you could take a stereo track, pull out the drum track, drop it into their impact drum sampler, and it will split up all of the individual drums into a pad, and now you could use that drum sound in your productions, you know? So our DAWs are starting to evolve into GAWs. Instead of digital audio workstations, they're turning into generative audio workstations, which is going to become an efficiency tool for us working in the studio, getting that polished sound quickly and easily. You know, even with Neutron and Nectar, which are mixing tools that help you, you know, listen to the whole mix and make suggestions on individual tracks. And then the third one, as I think is the most important, is AI's real strength is the ability to analyze massive amounts of data and give us actionable items based on a specific goal. So when it comes to marketing music, we're going to need help. Because if you think about it, right now on Spotify, there's over 900 years of music. Yeah. We don't have enough lifetimes to listen to it all. We need to find our fan base. We need to find out what engages them, what makes them excited, what makes them click, what makes them listen. Find that, create that, and put it in front of them in a way that is going to attract them into our marketing funnel and bring them into the fold. And AI is the perfect tool for that. Doing the boring stuff. Automating that whole process through Zapier or Hootsuite or Lately.ai. Using these tools to take that off our plate and still give our fans an engaging content and a social media experience. Based on all of these, this technology and what we have available, where do you see AI's biggest impact on the music industry, and especially for us as independent artists?
Yeah, you brought up a lot of really great points as you were talking just now. Before I comment on that, I won't forgive myself if I don't circle back and say, also Chris Barber played drums on Questions.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go, Chris.
No, I think I remembered everybody.
You can't forget the drummer, because you don't know. Going to bring Brussels sprouts into the van. You know that, if you don't mention him.
Yeah, right. And the album was mastered by Bruce Templeton.
Okay.
So now credits are done. Among many other thank yous and help I had. But I think, like you said, low-hanging fruit with AI as a tool, brainstorming marketing copy, brainstorming ideas about maybe like social media content, or, you know, like you said, brainstorming even just as a sounding board. Here's what I'm thinking, weighing pros and cons lists, things like that. Almost like talking into ChatGPT and hearing it echo back in kind of your own words, but different words, what you just said. And which, you can also do with a person, right? You can have a conversation. You can say, here's what I'm thinking about this, this, and this. And it's interesting as each person might give you a different response because they're bringing their own perspective to it. I'm still not entirely sure what exactly, the different AI tools' perspective is. It's kind of the combination of everything it was trained on plus what you're feeding it, which is, to me, that's fascinating. Where is the line of use versus abuse, and who gets to decide what that is? Like you said, these different technology advances throughout time that people said, that's cheating. Well, now it's not. Now it's just commonplace, and you couldn't imagine, not using it. Or, like you're saying, like with a dictionary or a thesaurus, if it didn't come from your brain, well, it's like, what about all the books you read all through school?
Mm-hmm.
There's, that's how you learned words. So you're not, why can't you just reference something else and be like, wait, what does that word mean again? Or like, maybe there's a better way to say this. And that's just called learning, right? So is there a certain amount of time between when you read the dictionary or read the thesaurus before you write the song that it's now okay because you learned it in the past and you aren't referencing it while writing and that's cheating? You know what I mean? So you bring up a really interesting point with that. I think maybe there isn't an answer. It will become clear as time goes on, but I do think we should be pre-thinking about all these things.
Interesting because
it's a little... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. And, I find, going back to the creative end of things, we as songwriters and creatives, we're constantly aware of our surroundings and what people say and how they say it, because we pick up on, ooh, that would be a good title, oh, that's a cool hook, or that's a great idea for a song, or whatever the case may be, whether we overhear it in conversation, in a restaurant, or in a party. We're always looking for that turn of phrase. using ChatGPT or any of the other AI engines that are out there is basically having that conversation with a larger brain. You know, being able to bounce these things off and say, hey, how many ways can I say this? You know, and then seeing what comes out, you may not use it verbatim, but you'll say, wow, that's a great concept idea. If I tweak it here and there, it now becomes, you know, something new. It's, to me, I look at it as a, like I said earlier, like a creativity catalyst. And you know, to answer your question, who decides the abuse to the use? And that's going to be the consumer. You know, it's going to be all about authenticity and the ability to touch. Because, I mean, really, if you think about it, music is an emotional communication that touches the listener to their soul. And AI is not going to do that. I don't think it's ever going to get to the point where it's actually going to accomplish that task. But it will give us who have human creativity, have that human experience, have that shared experience with our listeners, that we can take what AI gives us and translate that into that emotional communication. You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think there's also, and this is my opinion, right? There's definitely a line for me. If someone is tricking people, you know, if someone's lying about the tools they used, or, you know, I mean, but it's also interesting because there are people who, say, write books and they have a ghostwriter or someone who basically wrote the entire thing. You know, they took the person's story, like an autobiography, and they're like, okay, let's translate this into a palatable form so we can publish it. And, you know, so it is fascinating, right? What's the difference between listening to a song and going, that's an amazing chord progression? Chord progressions aren't copyrightable. You can take that. You can, you know, I don't know, take all sorts of samples or presets on synthesizers, or, you know, and all these different things and all these different elements, and piece them all together. And at what point is it technically original versus no longer original? At what point do you say, hey Siri, write me a symphony, you know, and it spits it out and you go, hey, I wrote a symphony. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, how much of it must you describe? How much of it must you bring in on your own before you can actually say, I wrote this thing? I don't know the answer to that. And
I mean, even in the studio, yeah. if you have, to give an example, we've been using presets for, because, you know, you had mentioned, you know, synthesizer patches.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
But we've been using plug-in presets for decades, you know.
Absolutely, right?
You know, and they're dumb presets. You know, here's a vocal sound. Well, it may not fit with the recording that you made, but you use that as a starting point. The thing with AI is that it can now listen. It can now analyze and then give you a starting point or a preset based on what you have recorded. You know what I mean? Like Neutron will listen, if you have it on all the tracks, it will listen to the complete composition and then make individual suggestions on each track as to where you should, you know, how to get the bass to not be muddy. You know what I mean? How to get the vocal to kind of lift up out of the mix a little bit. You know, so it's more of an intelligent preset, you know, as AI.
Yeah, yeah.
And that goes to the efficiency.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because it ends up, at that point, I mean, maybe being a little bit of a learning tool, unless it gets so good that you aren't actually learning from what it's able to teach you, versus maybe going to an industry pro you know, someone who's been around a lot longer and asking them that question. Hey, here's a pain point. Can you help me solve it? Versus, you know, having the system essentially just solve it for you and you don't know why. But it's efficient, like you said. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you go to an industry pro, especially a mastering engineer, and you say, solve this problem, and he does, he's not going to tell you what he did. That they guard their secrets, you know, whereas, you know, the AI is going to show you, this is what I did. Here is the starting point, and you can now tweak it to your taste.
Fascinating, yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've seen Ozone 12.
I must have had very good luck, because so many people over the years, I've just asked, how did you do that? And they've been willing to teach me.
Okay.
And so, you know, I mean, but yeah, I mean, especially, you know, if the AI can also teach you, you know, that's what I'm saying. If there's a learning opportunity, take it, you know, that's a good thing. Yeah.
Now, the other thing is that, I mean, let's face it, streaming, the whole digital revolution and streaming now is not sustainable as a business model. Spotify has instituted their policy a couple of years ago where they don't pay any track that has less than 1,000 streams a year, which is putting millions of dollars into their bottom line. Daniel right. Elk has more amassed more money than any artist on his platform by an exponential 10 times, which is ludicrous. Billboard magazine stated that of all the money that the music industry generates, only 12% ends up in the artist's hands. Because the industry is so glutted in the middle with a middleman structure that siphons off all the money before it gets, you know, from the fan to the artist. So, you know, there is a definite problem in the music industry. When streaming came out, you know, the movie industry figured it out. The TV industry figured it out. The music industry just screwed everybody below, you know, the certain level. They got screwed. Even the top artists are getting screwed. Everybody is getting screwed. So they haven't really figured it out. The only ones that did figure it out are the ones in the middle. The middleman structure, the record companies, the distributors, all those people who take the money, you know, ahead of time. What do you think needs to happen to change this dynamic?
That's a great question. I don't see that model going away. They've, you know, must have done some pretty atrocious things, and I don't think anybody... I phrased that wrong. I think plenty of people care, but I think that having the entire world's collection of music in your pocket for whatever they're charging now, I don't know, $14 a month, maybe it's more, I'm not sure. It's just too easy. from a consumer perspective. You know, I think about...
Consumer's not going back. You know, they're not going to the point where they're going to purchase product again. But there is a new way that I've been exploring extensively. Let's take streaming, for instance. Now, if you wanted to go to Spotify right now and you wanted to take an accountant with you and go into their office and say, I want to audit your books and make sure that the music that I have on your platform, that I'm getting properly counted and compensated for, they're not going to give it to you. There is no transparency. Zero. You have absolutely no idea if you're getting counted properly, if you're being compensated properly, if you're being ghosted or set up in the algorithm so you're not being played or not showing up in searches. So you know, basically there's zero transparency in this process. Now, there are streaming services that have been developed that utilize the blockchain as a driving, as the engine. Audius.co right now is one of the biggest ones out there. And the first thing that is an advantage to the independent artist is the fact that it's a decentralized system. In other words, no company, no person, no board of directors, no corporation can own it. It is owned only by the users who pay for it, the listeners, and the artists who put up their content. They're in charge of the service. And because of it's decentralized, they pay up to 80% of the incoming revenue directly back to the artist. Okay? The second thing is, it is 100% totally transparent. You put your music up there, and you can go into that block at any time and see exactly how many streams you had, how much money you made at any given moment. In addition, you can incorporate what they call a smart contract into that block. And let's say you had a collaborator. He gets a certain percentage, you get a certain percentage. As soon as your music is accessed, that contract is triggered. Your collaborator gets paid, you get paid. Now, this also opens you up to the ability to create shares in your song and sell those shares to your fan base. Now, you don't have to do the accounting because you incorporate that into that smart contract. Once your music is accessed, you get paid, your collaborator gets paid, and your investors get paid, your fans. Okay? Now, here's the kicker on that. Let's say your fans bought a couple shares of your song. They made their money back, and let's say it's starting to kind of increase in value, and they resell it on an open market. You, as the artist, now get a commission off of that resale in perpetuity. Every time it gets resold, you get a commission. So that's another revenue stream. Okay? In addition to that, you can now create your own tokens, your own Bitcoin, and use those Bitcoins to give to, you know, to have your fans purchase so they can have access to, let's say, a special, you know, like fan club site, and, you know, which they call a DAO, or Decentralized Autonomous Organization. And now you can put, with that access, they may want, you may give them the sheet music to the song. You know, they may have access to tickets to a show. They may have access to merch. They may have access to voting for the next single that will come out. Anything you want can be made to have access through these tokens. And it's a whole ecosystem that is a direct fan-to-artist relationship that cuts out the middleman structure. And if you think about it, it's all based on these digital wallets. And you go to the store now, you go to Starbucks, you just wipe your phone over the top of the reader now. They use these digital wallets. It's already here. The technology is in place. All you have to do is introduce your fan base to this new way of consuming music and being engaged with the artist. Because as recorded music has lost the status of product, the brand now has become the new product. The access to an artist, being engaged with the artist's journey, is now the new product. What do you think of that as a potential for the future of the industry?
Yeah, everything you just shared is, you know, it's great ideas. And like you said, the technology to make it happen is here, you know. Blockchain has been around for quite a while now, mm-hmm. and many, many use cases in many different industries. And, you know, I could see that working. And the thing is, in my mind, immediately I just go, it has to be so easy for the consumer. As artists, you know, we're just like, and I think this has been a long time, you know, we're told you should be grateful just to have the opportunity to perform. You should be grateful just to have the opportunity to have an audience, right? And so we find, I think, maybe ourselves racing to the bottom, racing to zero. We'll just give it all away if someone will listen. So it is interesting to kind of start, you know, I mean, even with social media, we do that, like the behind the scenes, the artist story. Well, that's just micro content now. That's us trying to get viral, trying to get more audience, and we give it away for free, you know? And I think, you know, finding a way to, you know, whatever, gatekeep a little bit of that mystery or a little bit of that mystique, there is maybe some opportunities for monetization there, you know, because we have to eat too, you know. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money, years of effort to create what we create and share our unique perspective. And finding a way to earn a living from it is, you know, it is definitely an interesting point in time. And I'll be curious to see where it goes from here.
Well, I mean, if you really think about it, you know, every industry, no matter what you look at, whether it's theater, television, movies, has a distinct middle class, except for the music industry. We do not have a middle class. In fact, the music industry currently is designed to make sure that doesn't happen. You know, you should be able to choose the career of being a musician with a reasonable expectation that you should be able to pay your bills, raise a family, put some money away for retirement, and create a living out of this as a career. And by decentralizing this music industry, because it's not the fact that there's a lack of money. It's the fact that there's a lack of opportunity to get the money. By creating a direct fan-to-artist relationship, especially through revenue streams, that opportunity becomes more real. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that is the decentralization, using blockchain is definitely one way to do it. You know, using other third-party platforms, Patreon or things like that. I mean, even on my website, I've created some membership areas. Right now, selling tickets for the show, anybody who buys a ticket gets early access to the entire album. So I just created my own streaming player on my website. It's blocked by a password. You buy the album, you're prompted to create a username and a password because you are not, you bought the album, but the tickets or whatever, you know, or anytime somebody buys a CD, well, you can just go to my website, log in and have access to the music there.
Right. So you're basically already doing it, but you're doing it on your own without the Web3 technology that would make it easier for you.
Right. Yeah. You know, I don't have any of the smart contracts set up. I haven't created a blockchain, or I'm not using some other, you know,
yeah, the NFTs
blockchain.
or you know,
right.
That
exactly.
Access.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Exactly. Even some of these big companies, these ticket companies, are starting to realize, and especially the bigger artists, NFT tickets are the future. You know, I mean, even the Grammys use them now. The thing with the NFT tickets is that it's impossible to scalp. Because
right.
of the smart mm-hmm. contract, you can put into that contract that any value, or, you know, if you try to charge more than the face value of that ticket, or more than 10% of the face value of the ticket, whatever you want, all the extra money doesn't go to the person selling the ticket. It goes to the artist or it goes to the promoter. You know, so they eliminate that whole scalping thing, you know?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that right there makes me smile, just the thought of that, because, you know, with AI music, with streaming dollars not really going to the artist, and all of that, what do we have left? Well, the ability to perform live, these skills that we've, you know, they're hard-won skills that we've worked many, many hours, many, you know, people don't see that time in the practice room, day after day, year after year, and you get up on stage and all of a sudden, you know, who's making all the money from that performance? And, you know, even as a consumer, I want to go to a concert and you just see the tickets selling out so fast and you end up at the concert and only half the seats are full because the tickets are just in the hands of a scalper, you know. But, you know, they found a way to sell them on the back end where they still made money. And, you know, that stuff can be disheartening for sure. But yeah, finding a way to just make, like, you know, instead of being like scalping is illegal, well, whatever, but no, like, it's just not a profitable business to like buy a bunch of tickets if you have no intention of going to that concert, just to like, you know, make a buck,
right?
In the middle, you know, if that can just be eliminated through the technology, I think that could be a really good step in the right direction for music.
Oh yeah, and it's like I said, the technology's here, and we're just ready to just need to implement it. Well, you know, yep. I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us. It's been a real pleasure. And we're going to give everyone out there a double shot from your new release. You guys are going to love this. Just turn it up loud. To hell with the neighbors. We're going to have a party tonight.
That's right. Thanks for having me, Richard.
make you shout now, honey. I'm gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey. Gonna